So if the world is created by perception, and perception manifests as thought, and then there's word, and then there's action, whose perception are we listening to? And when I inquired into this, I realised that there are lots of perceptions. Most people work off mind perception. They work off an intellectual perception. And those are very limited perceptions. It's software. What I try to do, what I work on in my everyday life, what I work on when I teach the sovereignty class, and when I do mentoring, is getting people to find their chief architect. So the architecture of our reality is built by our perception, but who's the chief architect? Who is the main perception? And I recognise, of course, that above the body, above the sensual body, above the mind body, above the egoic body, is the soul body, the soul perception. And that's the voice we need to listen to. That's the voice of intuition. That's like a divine sat-nav. The Christians would call it a city on a hill. Be a city on a hill. Be a city on a hill, and don't hide your light under a bushel. The bushel represents the mind. So it's saying, and the light represents your soul, or your intuition, what's connected to infinity and what's connected to abundance. So don't hide your kind of chief perception, your chief architect, under the bushel or the basket of mind. We need to lift our perception above the mind and then shine down on it, so we have a divine sat-nav. So I'm led by my intuition. Intuition is the way God speaks to us, or again, it's the way potential speaks to us, it's the way infinity speaks to us, it's the way the Akashic speaks to us, it's the way the zero gravity field speaks to us, it's the way the collective unconscious speaks to us. Depending on whatever language you're using, intuition is how we get instruction from God. So we are informed by intuition, that is our soul perception, and then we work through our physical body. So then when we have a soul perception, we have a divine sat-nav says, this is how you should unfold, this is where you should go, this is your unique signature, this is your unique self, this is your unique destination, this is how you should unfold. This is your DNA. When we hear that intuition, and it's a powerful intuition because we've connected to it 50 trillion cells, and this intuition will say, you have infinite potential. 50 trillion cells will fall into line and follow that soul perception. So when we teach, we're not just, teaching people to be better businessmen or to be better people. We're teaching people to find their chief feature, to find their unique signature, to find their true will. And we do that by connecting them to their soul perception. So instead of having 20 perceptions, 50 perceptions, or what Gurdjieff said, hundreds of perceptions, hundreds of sub-personalities, we have one main perception, like a CEO, and the CEO says, this is where we can unfold, this is where we're going, this is our destination, and we aim towards that, and every one of those 50 trillion cells falls into line. But of course, we've had years and years and years of listening to every new flavor of perception. We look at the news, we read the newspapers, we listen to our friends, we take information in from our environment, and we are led by other people's perceptions, by other people's ideas, by other people's conditioning. So we've given a certain amount of conditioning when we're born. We learn a lot of conditioning in the next 6 years, and then that pretty much becomes our life unless we challenge it. So when you first start looking at perception, you think, well, of course, everything's based on perception. Everything. I've changed my reality several times by changing perception. But in order to change your perception, you've got to challenge the old perception. And we recognise, of course, when you start looking at perception, that perception is informed by everything you've ever learned, everything you've ever heard, everything you've ever been taught, by, you know, the cells you're born with, by the information you learn that goes on your basic cognition. Everything from the shiver on the surface of your skin to the outer reaches of the galaxy or of the universe informs you with a perception. So our environment informs our perception. What we read every day, what we watch every day, who we talk to, our impressions, our influences, what food we eat, what we drink, what we inject into ourselves, who we listen to. Everything informs our perception. Mostly what you see on the outside in the environment around you is created by the environment on the inside. So the organisation represents the organism. As without, as within, as Hermes says, what's on the inside you'll see reflected on the outside. So if we want to change perception, we have to. It's an inside job. But we can help ourselves by changing our environment. So when people come on a walk, say for instance at Coombe Abbey, or I do walks in London, I walk with people in London, I do quite a lot of mentoring in London with all sorts of people from different walks of life. You know, from taxi drivers to CEOs, from, you know, world-class writers, you know, to guys that are on the dole. A real mixture of different people. What I do when I work with people is I take them to a new environment. So I take them round, perhaps, King James Park. I show them the London Eye at one end, Buckingham Palace at the other end. Then we go into one of the cafes and we sit in one of the cafes and have something to drink. Then I'll go up to BAFTA or the Groucho Club and go into an environment where you are just surrounded by people of expanded consciousness. If you go to BAFTA, for instance, you're surrounded by, without any question, the best film talent in the world today. The most elite film talent. So you go in, you look at the trophies, you look at the Oscars. You sit in that environment, you sit in the cinema, and you expand. That environment expands you. I sat the other day with a friend of mine called Paul Abbott, who's probably the most influential television writer in television history in this country. He's working in America at the moment. And he was an early mentor for me with my writing, and I met him at the Ivy Club in London. And this is not about being posh. This is just about saying when you are in an environment where people are expanded, they no longer have small beliefs. They believe that everything's possible. You expand with it. When I first met Paul, when he mentored me with a writing some years ago, he invited me up to Manchester, and I was quite afraid to go because, you know, why would Paul Abbott want to mentor me? I'm nobody. That was my old cognition. So it was quite a lot of fear. So I got up there and he was living in a £2 million house. And he said to me, he pointed out the window, he said, see that house over there? He showed me another house across the garden. And he said, I'm going to buy that. And it was worth about £2.5 million. He said, I'm going to buy that and I'm going to fill it full of writers. It's going to be a writer's room. And I'm going to have all of these writers. I'm going to develop all these writers. I'm going to mentor all these writers. And his house was like Euston Station. The amount of people coming and going that he was mentoring, that he was serving. And he talked to me about the business and gave me not so much advice on the writing, because he knew that's something that just had to unfold. He basically just showed me what was possible. Then he took me to his flat. He'd got a flat in Baker Street. That was worth about £250,000. I guess it'd probably be worth about £1.6 million now. Again, I'm not going to get caught up in the numbers. This is just about expanding your awareness, expanding and seeing your potential. So I'm there in this place and I'm looking at Paul, and he's like me. Intellectually, he's like me. He comes from the same background as me. He had a horrific upbringing. It's very public. He was raped when he was young by his uncle. He had electric shock treatment 3 times. He had a very, very difficult upbringing, and he managed to harness all that chaos and that pain and became one of the most prolific writers in history. an incredible man, incredibly generous man. So I looked at him and thought, well, he's got two arms, he's got two legs, he's got a lot of pain in his life, he's had tremendously bad cognition and beliefs, but he's changed them. Suddenly he's expanded himself to become this creative genius. And at the time you look at it and you think, oh, this is really interesting, this is really powerful. I come back to my wife and I said, everything's changed after I met Paul. Everything's changed. But I didn't quite know why, I just knew everything had. The main thing I got from it when I met him the other day, and I said this to him, I said, it's really interesting because you showed me it was possible to have a home in London, if I wanted to have a home in London. And now I've got a home in London. And I realised that just by being in his company and seeing that it was possible, I was able to expand to that. Similarly, when I was in London screening a film, the first film I ever made called Bouncer, I was in this screening room and there was lots of people milling around and somebody pointed to this guy in the corner and said, see that guy over there? And I said, yeah. And he said, he was BAFTA nominated. And I remember thinking, fucking hell, that would be nice. But I saw this guy. He was in my company. I saw it was possible. He was like me. And I expanded. And then the next year, I was BAFTA nominated. And in the car, when we were BAFTA nominated but we didn't win, I met somebody in the car on the way back to the party after the BAFTAs that did win. And he let me hold the BAFTA. And I looked at him. And this guy wasn't very grateful for winning. He was kind of a little bit arrogant about it. And my wife said to me afterwards, when we win it, we'll be very grateful. But I suddenly sat next to an ordinary man with two arms and two legs and one head, like me, similar background, and he'd won a BAFTA. The next year I won a BAFTA, because it's possible. It showed me it was possible, and I expanded. So a lot of it is about, we change our perception by being in the company of other people who are like us, who have changed their perception. We challenge our old beliefs by being in the company of people that have challenged their old beliefs. We become who we want to become by being around other people that have become what they want to become. And we say to them, it's possible. And we show them the proof. I went and did a talk recently at a prison, and I said to my wife, I need to take all my stuff, I need to take my BAFTA, I need to take my plays, I need to take my films, I need to take the notepads that I wrote my first book on in the toilet in the factory, I need to take them with me. But I don't know why, I just know I need to take them with me. And I went up to this prison, it was right up north, and it took me ages to get there, and it's a Category A prison, and it's impregnable, can't get in, can't get out. And the first thing I noticed was that I could get in. I had to go through about a dozen locked doors to get to the centre of the prison to talk to these people. And I thought, how did I get in here? How did I get in? How did I get out? How come these people are in there and they can't get out? They're in there, but they can't get out. And I realised I'd got a key. I had a BAFTA. So when people said, oh, let's bring Jeff Thompson to the prison, talk to the prisoners. And perhaps the governor might have said, well, who's Jeff Thompson? Well, he won a BAFTA. And he used to be a criminal. And he used to be violent. And now he's not. And he does a good talk about that. And he's proven you can change because he's won a BAFTA. He's written a play. He's been a journalist. He's been a choreographer. He's been a martial arts expert. So I recognise, first of all, there's my siddha. There's my miracle. I have a key that takes me through locked doors. That was a revelation to me. That was amazing. I recognised that the key I had when I spoke to these prisoners, and I just said to them, I brought you some things just to show you some of the things I've made. And I showed them the BAFTA. And I showed them the notepads. I said, these are the notepads where I wrote my first book in a factory where I was hired to sweep floors. And here's the BAFTA. Here's a play. Here's another play. Here's a £2 million film based on my life. Here's a 10-minute film starring Ray Winston. Here's a 15-minute film that won a BAFTA. Here's a 30-minute film that was long-listed for the Oscars. It's not bragging, it's just proof. These kids need to see proof. I need to see proof. We need proof. So you say to them, you can change your life by changing your perception. And here's the proof. I've showed them the proof. I said, hold the proof. Touch the proof. Feel the proof. This is the proof. These things in and of themselves are neither here nor there. A BAFTA is just a, you know, a brass statue. But it takes me through locked doors. It takes me into places that I couldn't have gone before. It opens doors. Opens doors out there. Opens doors in me. When you win a BAFTA, you suddenly think, what else could I do? When I published my first book, I thought, if I can publish a book, let me go back a bit further. When I published my first article, a man called Terry O'Neill, who is my hero in martial arts, published my first article. And this guy was like, you know, legendary. And he still is a legendary character. And he said to me, he rang me personally. This is my hero ringing me. This would be like, you know, George Best ringing you up if you want to play football. And he said to me, you have something. And he said, I've given this to my editor. And he said, this guy has something. So Terry O'Neill published my article. Doors opened in me. Doors opened outside because people said, oh, this guy's written an article. This is interesting. Let's bring him down and meet him. Let's bring him down to teach. Suddenly, I've created a key in me and I've created a key out there. I'm a key maker. So that key gets me into lots of places. So Terry O'Neill published my first article called Confrontation Desensitization. It was an article about how we get desensitized to fear by confronting fear. We collect power by confronting trauma. So that opened the door. And it made me believe it was possible to write a book. So I wrote a book. But before I could write the book, before I could change my perception of the ability, you know, I needed to believe I had the ability to write a book, I acquired a massive amount of intellectual knowledge about people like me who'd written a book. So cognitively, I believed it was possible. Then I realised I couldn't actually see myself as a writer. Every time I tried to see myself in my mind's eye, this is a second level of changing cognition, I couldn't see myself. Every time I saw myself, this voice would go, don't be stupid. You're not anybody. Who do you think you are? Do you know what you look like? Somebody I love said this to me. This goes in, this nests on your cognition, and it breeds. She said, you look like a real cunt. Please forgive my language. I want to be literal. I want to be literal because that word breaks through layers of consciousness and sits on your cognition as truth. So when you step forward and you say, I'm going to be a writer, this voice says, really? Don't forget what a cunt you are. That's really powerful, isn't it? It's really powerful. That's on the cognition. So before I can become a writer, I have to look at that. I have to inquire into that. Is that true? Is that what I am? Am I worth nothing? No, it's not true. So I have to go in there. And the person that put it there, I have to prove them wrong. But I love this person. And who wants to prove someone that we love wrong? When somebody we love tells us we're not worth anything, it's like we're in a hypnotic state. It goes in, we don't challenge it. We just don't challenge it. So it sits on the cognition and it feels real, and that's what we project into the world. So I started to get intellectual knowledge, and I started to imagine myself as a writer. And when these voices rose up, I thought, I inquired, where did that voice come from? That came from her, that came from him, that came from them. And I said, that voice isn't right. That voice isn't true. I know this is possible. And I'm prepared to do the work. I know this is possible. I've got intellectual proof. So for the pennies were stacking behind me and it was all going to tip because I was starting to see myself. Then I showed my manuscript to one or two friends who said, this is good. What you've written is good. This is funny. This is strong. This is quite shocking. This is original. I took it to a newspaper and gave it to a girl called Sue Lari, who was a journalist, and she said, even before I read it, I can tell you that you've achieved something great because you've written a book. And there are 18 journalists upstairs in this office, all of whom want to write a book, and none of them have. None of them probably will. You have. That's massive. So I started to be able to, because people had given me this confidence, I started to be able to see myself, to visualise myself as a writer. Then my friend Ian McCraner read my manuscript and he said, we could get this published. And he started to send it to loads of people, my friend Ian. He did loads for me. He was so kind to me because he believed in me. He saw it and he believed it. So I started to be able to see it, and every time those voices rose up, I was able to knock them back a little bit because I was starting to get proof that these voices were wrong. And then when I published the book, there's nobody could tell me it wasn't possible because I'd done it. Suddenly it was possible. And because I'd written one book and I knew that was possible, my conscious net expanded. My perception expanded exponentially. Exponentially. Within a year, I'd written 5 new books. Within 2 years, I'd written 5 new books and then a play. And then I started to write films. Then I started to write journalism. I was interviewed by a guy who wrote for The Times. And he was a nice man. And he was a very, really good writer. And he said, oh, I write for The Times. He was doing an interview for me for the Evening Standard of London. And he said, and I said to him, oh, the Times, that's a great newspaper. I'm going to write for the Times one day. And he scoffed at me. He laughed at me. He said, well, I'd like to see that. Like it wasn't possible. So I decided to prove to myself that if I wanted to write for one of the best newspapers in the world, at the highest level of journalism, that was possible if I did the work. So a couple of years later, I wrote a feature for The Times. So nobody can tell me that's not possible, because I've proven it is possible. The schematic for the whole universe, the seed of the whole universe, is in us. And if we've got a strong enough perception, we can unfold everything we want to unfold. We can unfold everything we want to experience. So, you know, one book became 40 books, and a play became... I ended up working at the Royal Court as Royal Court Writers Group in London, all sorts of possibilities opened up. You know, working in film, working in journalism, I even choreographed a West End play. My friend wrote a play, it's Jim Cartwright, called Hard Fruit, and I choreographed it. It was a play about two old wrestlers, and I choreographed it and got great reviews in the Nationals for my choreography. I don't know how to choreograph a play, but I did know what a fight looked like, and so I changed my perception of the fact that I didn't know what I was doing, and I thought, well, I do know what I'm doing. And I choreographed some great fights in this play. One of the fights was 20 minutes long. So it was just another thing where I just thought, I'm going to try that and experience it. Everything is possible. It's all possible. But if we want to lead 50 trillion members of our own community, if we want to lead this 50 trillion population, it stands, you know, if we want to lead ourselves, we want to lead 50 trillion parts of ourselves, stands to reason that we need to be able to control the smaller stuff. We need to be able to control what we eat. Our palate. We need to be able to control what we read. We need to be able to control our environment, because our environment informs our perception. We need to be able to control our sensual body. If we can't make ourselves do the things we're afraid to do, and we can't stop ourselves from doing the things we know we shouldn't do, we haven't got free will. Most people haven't got free will anyway, because 95% of what they do comes from an unconscious place. that can be reversed. Cognition can be changed. Perception can be changed. So when we do the courses, and when we teach, and when we mentor, that's what we're doing. And when we pass that information on to other people, of course, we're passing it back on to ourselves again. So there's 50 trillion of me that need this information. So when I'm kind to people, because I know that as a perception, kindness is massively rewarding, 50 trillion cells are satiated with kindness. When I'm generous to people, 50 trillion cells, 50 trillion individuals in me experience generosity. When I teach people how to access abundance, I teach 50 trillion parts of myself how to access abundance. When I, you know, it was something my wife said to me once, she said, do you think that writing a film out there is powerful because you think that's global? She says, when you talk to a stranger on the phone and you're talking through depression, she said, that's global. And I remember feeling very moved by what she said and thinking, yeah, the power isn't really out there, the power's in here. Because if I serve someone from a selfless place, if I serve someone from a place of love, then 50 trillion cells, 50 trillion versions of me get fed with love. So it makes no sense for me to be aggressive to somebody, because that would mean filling 50 trillion cells with aggression, which is caustic. And it means feeding old perception, which is caustic. Being judgmental to people is being judgmental to 50 trillion versions of me. That's not what I want to do with my life. And I'm hopefully, if you're watching this, I'm sure that's not what you want to do. So, sovereignty isn't just about, you know, saying, oh, I'm self-sovereign, you know, I can push hard on the weights, or, you know, I can do animal day, or I can do, you know, I can stand on a nightclub door. It's having sovereignty over 50 trillion cells. It's a huge responsibility. And of course, science tells us that those 50 trillion cells are connected to everything else in the whole universe. Everything is connected. Everything is connected. So everything we do affects everything else. When a bird lands in a tree, as Leonardo said, not Leonardo DiCaprio, Leonardo da Vinci said, when a bird lands in a tree, the whole world changes, because everything affects everything. Separation is an illusion. So if we're separated from money by an emotion, if we're separated from love by an emotion or by a perception, if we're separated from health by a perception, if we're separated from employment by a perception, if we're separated from success by a perception, that separation is illusory, but it still keeps you separate. So what we need to do is work on dissolving the separation. We dissolve the separation by recognizing that separation is created by unconscious perception. Unconscious perception can be changed, but only if you recognize it when it rises up. And there are techniques to challenge perception and change perception and expand perception. So eventually we're there thinking, there's nothing I can't do. So I'm in my class, I'm in my black belt class, and I got a guy stood here and a guy stood here. This one is on the dole and they said there's no work about, there's no money about, he's only come on the course because somebody died and left him some money. The environment's terrible. There's no work and it's all the government's fault. He's partnered with this guy. They're both wearing jeans. They're both wearing t-shirts and shorts. He's partnering with this guy here. And they don't know each other. They're strangers. They've just come on this course. This guy here runs a multinational company. He hires 1,000 people. He turns over £100 million. And his worry is that he's not really even scratching the surface. In fact, he's sometimes overwhelmed by his power to serve, his power to change things. What's the difference between these two people? Perception. They're both in the same room, in the same city, wearing almost identical clothes, on the same course. What's the difference? Perception. My job is to change my perception so that I can expand and access my potentiality. I want to access God. God is my potentiality. He's my ultimate potential. I would see God as love. I want to access love. I want to work from love. So whether I'm sweeping a floor or whether I'm writing a film, I want to do it from a place of love. I can access God through if I'm washing the dishes, I can access it through that. It's not about necessarily where you are. If you're sweeping a floor and you're accessing God, you're in a place of bliss, then it makes no difference when you're in, whether you're in Buckingham Palace or whether you, you know, whether you're in a factory in Coventry, it makes no difference. You're accessing God. The only time those things become caustic is when you feel imprisoned by that and you think, this is below my potential, I want to do more. Once we get there, we recognise that whether I'm laying bricks in my front garden, whether I'm writing an Oscar winning film, if I'm doing it from a place of love, I'm accessing my greatest potentiality. And if you access your greatest potentiality, even in the smallest way, the tiniest way, and you connect to God with it, you satiate 50 trillion cells, and those 15 trillion cells spark out and satiate everything. It's what Krishna says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of the big Hindu texts. His servant comes to him and his servant's embarrassed because he's got no money, and he visits Krishna and his wife says, you need to take a gift. So they borrow some rice, a handful of rice, and they put it in an old rag. And he goes to Krishna and he said, I'm really sorry, this is all I got. And he gives it to Krishna. And Krishna says, holds the rice and says to him, because you've brought this with love, because you've delivered this with love, this will feed me and it will feed the whole universe. I love that. Because what he's saying is, if you deliver anything with love, it will satiate everything. It isn't the amount, it isn't the value, it's the intention. If the intention comes from a place of love, if the intention comes from love, it will connect you to bliss. Everything will be fed. So ultimately, I mean, I'm exploring my potential all the time, but my potential is here now. I'm doing this now, and I'm doing it from a place of love. I'm connecting to bliss. I feel it when I'm doing it. And when I did a block paving in my garden, me and Sharon, we did a path and we did a little wall, and we spent about 2 weeks on doing this in our garden, and we were in bliss for 2 weeks. You know, it was just great. We created something. We had a vision of it and we created it. We manifested it in front of ourselves. And every time I look at that, I just feel great because I thought, I created that. It's not what you do, it's where you do it from. And it's not the fact that you're working in a factory or, you know, you're doing something that you might consider menial. Because I know loads of people who are writing in Hollywood who feel like they're in a gilded cage because they're not working from love. If you're working from love wherever you are, it's fine. It's just making sure that you work from love and follow your potential, you know. So don't try and be a frog if you're meant to be a fish. Don't try to be a willow if you're meant to be an oak. Don't try and be an oak if your DNA says you're a summer flower that lasts one season. Everything feeds the infrastructure. Trying to find your unique gift, and then just isolate that and work on that, and work from love, work from that connection of love, and recognize that every time you don't work from love, 50 trillion cells get filled with something that doesn't come from love. So perception is everything. Sovereignty over the perception feels multifaceted. It feels like, well, you know, where does my perception come from? Does it come from what I read, what I eat? Does it come from what I see? Does it come from my impressions? Does it come from, you know, the weather on my skin? Does it come from the stars and from the, you know, from the orbit of the sun? Does it come from the movement of the planets? It comes from all of those places. But ultimately, the schematic, the key is in us. When they talk about the kingdom, the kingdom's in us. We are key makers. We can create keys. Those keys are working on our cells and genes by having one very solid, very powerful perception, and that perception comes from a place of love. We work from love. When we work from love, the whole universe conspires to work with us. Viktor Frankl called it logotherapy. He said it's the search for purpose. Logos means purpose. Logos means God. God means love. So when we work from love, the universe conspires. It's the master key. That's the master key. So then it doesn't really matter too much whether you're the head of a big company or whether you're sweeping the floors. As long as you do it from that place of love, you become the most powerful person in the universe because you're connected to everything. And then it's just about having the fun. What do I want to explore? Where do I feel my greatest potential lies? And following that, my greatest potential didn't lie in all the places, you know, that I thought they lay. I thought it maybe lay in the ability to have a fight, the ability to defend myself. Actually, my greatest potential lay in inquiring into myself and recognising that I can access everything. So how do we know when our perceptions are wrong? Go towards the areas where we feel most fear. Go towards the areas where we feel terror, red hot fear, where we feel as though we just can't possibly be there. Sit in those areas. Dissolve those areas. The boon, the treasure, the gifts are in those areas. These testing areas. The word test means to purify, to separate. They used to use it with metal. Heat metal to separate the purity, the pure from the impure. So we separate the ostentation, we separate the wheat from the chaff. So we separate the ostentation from the essence and we leave ourselves with essence. So I head towards the areas that are uncomfortable. I head towards the areas where I feel fear. If I feel red hot fear, that's where what Gurdjieff would call the chief feature. Our access to the greatest light or the greatest potential or to God is through our darkest point. So just head towards that. Head towards the areas that we are afraid of. That's there every day for everybody. Every day. But it all comes back to what we said before. Sovereignty is in perception. Perception is in cognition. Cognition can be changed. So when I'm walking through St. James's Park and I'm walking towards Buckingham Palace, it's really amazing because I'm just thinking, of course, it's obvious. That palace, before that palace can exist in the world, it's got to be, the infrastructure, it's got to be built onto my perception, onto my cognition. Somebody had to believe it was possible to build that, to create that magnificent infrastructure. Any external infrastructure has got to be built on the inside first. So if we want a palace on the outside, we need to build a palace on the inside. The palace maybe just represents potential, just potentiality. So then you look at, you look at the wheel on the other end, the London Eye, this magnificent kind of structure. And you just think, yeah, of course. We're in St. James's Park. That's at one end. The eye's at one end, interestingly. And the palace is at the other end. So we have to be able to see the palace through the eye, through the middle eye, through the perception. For us to be able to create in the world what we want to create, we have to be able to first see it in our mind. To be able to see it in our mind, we have to believe intellectually it's possible. And of course, everything's possible, because people are creating the most amazing, impossible things. The seed of the whole universe exists in us. We just have to fulfill it. So if I want to build a palatial life, if I want to build from my best potential, I need to be able to intellectually expand to that, and then I need to be able to visually see it. I need to recognise that that palace is built by perception. And when I lived in a bedsit, and and it was a kind of quite hideous place, I was in a very dark place, that was built by my perception as well. And yet, interestingly, like we said before, once you get that perception, once you understand that, this is what Milton said, the mind is its own place. It can create a heaven out of hell. It can create a hell out of heaven. When I was in that bedsit, living with Sharon, we used to walk down to the gym. We used to train in this real old gym. My friend Tony Capola had this real spit and sawdust gym with rusting bars and creaking showers. and I absolutely loved it. We'd go and train, we'd get some fish and chips on the way back, we'd sit in this tiny bedsit, and it was bliss. What made it bliss? Just perception. I was in there with a girl I loved. I was in there with my freedom. So once you get that, it doesn't really matter whether you're living in a palace or whether you're living in a hut. Perception is going to create, you know, perception makes you realise that you're in the world. You're in space. And we can make everywhere beautiful. But explore everything. Explore all of it. Challenge old perceptions. When they rise up, and they rise up with emotion, with fear, with judgment, with jealousy, with anger, with envy, when they rise up, challenge it. Don't accept it. Change perception. You change perception by noticing it when it rising up, when it rises up, by not engaging it, by not identifying with it, by not feeding it. And then you say, okay, what perception do I want? And then change the perception to what you do want, and start to perceive the world that you really want. Get the world that you really want. Get the reality that you really want. How do we start? First of all, we change our perception of our body. I was working with a guy who said, I'm trying to tell my wife that we can create anything we want, but she doesn't believe me. She scoffs at me. And I said, you know why she scoffs at you? Because you're 7 stone overweight. So she doesn't believe you. And you don't believe you. Because if you could change any, if you could create any reality you wanted, you'd start with the body that you're in. You would make the body a perfect conduit for this essence. This is the machine. This is the key maker. So make it lean, make it linear, make it aligned, make it positive. Start. So we start with the proof needs to, we need the proof ourselves. So we prove it by changing the one thing that most people think they can't change. If we're in a body that's overweight or unhealthy, start by working on that and start by changing that. Change the vehicle. So then you look in the mirror and you say, yes, it's possible. I've changed the most difficult thing. I've changed the machine. I've changed this massive, amazing vehicle. Then you start to look at and you think, okay, what's my relationship like with my wife, with my children, with my friends? Do I have enemies? If I've got enemies, it's just a perception. Let's start changing that. Let's get rid of our enemies by making them friends. How do we make them friends? By changing our perception of them. By recognising that friend and enemy is just a perception. The Bhagavad Gita says the self is the self's only friend. The self is the self's only enemy. If we create, if we have a perception of enemies, we create enemies. So if we can dissolve, not so much thinking about object and subject, you know, me and my enemy, just thinking about what sits in between me and my enemy, an emotion. The emotion is a separation. The separation is illusory. It might have three dimensions and it might be filled with fear, but we can dissolve that and it's an internal game. So we start by changing. If we want to create the reality we want to experience, we need proof. One of the big things I recognise by doing my talks in places, in prisons and stuff like that, is that when you're talking to people, they need proof. They need proof, they need to see proof. So you say, here's the proof. Look, feel the proof, hold the proof. Touch it. And when they feel it, they expand. And then they think, I have got a choice. But then the choice is, how do I change? You change everything by changing your perception. And you change perception by challenging old beliefs. When they rise up and the beliefs are fundamental, or the beliefs have any kind of negative, you know, emotion like anger or fear or violence or jealousy or envy, challenge them. They're illusory. They're old perceptions. They're not necessary. So we come from one big perception, which is, I want to work everything through love. I want everything to come through love. You've got to start with the self. I need to look in the mirror. It's not about how much money I've got in the bank. It's not about the size of my house, because I can have all that. I can have £500 million, but have 3 mistresses and a cocaine addiction. What does that make me? It makes me a prisoner. It means I'm in a gilded cage. That's not freedom. Freedom is the ability to be able to make yourself do the things that you think you're afraid of. Stop yourself from doing the things that are caustic. It means the ability to change perception. We have the ability to do that. Dharma Matters says, you know, the world is created by perception. The perception can be changed. And that's the battle, that's the journey. So this whole idea that you know, we need to access the chief architect, the chief perception, and work everything from that same perception, from the CEO down. Then we can create the reality we want to create. So I've made some notes here. I just want to just check that I've covered everything I want to cover. Yeah, just really to say, you know, now is the time to act, because we're all dying. You know, we have a terminal disease. It's called life. So act now. We think we can put it off till tomorrow. We can put it off till next week, next year, new year, to another time, to a better time. We think that we'll, you know, we'll educate ourselves, we'll do the course, we'll run the marathon, we'll start the new job, we'll get out of the bad relationship when the circumstances are right. The circumstances are right now. The circumstances are right now. So now is the time to change. And it's not difficult to know what the first step is, because if you look in the mirror, it'll tell you. And if you look at what your surroundings are like, it will tell you. As within, as without. Look at your environment. Look at the impressions. Look at the influences. Look at the perceptions all around you. They're a reflection, a projection of what's in you. If they're not satisfactory, if they're not coming from a place of love, if it's not where you want to be, start changing those things. Change your body. Change your job. Change your relationship, change your car, change your house, change your street, change your city, change the country. Take yourself out of this reality if you can, and start looking from above and see that it's all just fiction. But you're the writer of the fiction, because the fiction comes from your perception, and perception can be changed. Start with your own body. Start with this physical, beautiful vehicle. Get that right. Don't pretend you can change the world if you can't change your socks once a day. It takes a massive discipline. Make yourself sit down. And when those voices of old perception rise up and challenge you, dissolve them. They've shown themselves. Dissolve them and create something better. You've got access to all the material in the world at the moment if you wanted to read and to educate yourself about this stuff. It's all there. Everything's there. Anyway, so it's all about perception, and I'm going to go off and plant some seeds, because every time I plant seeds out there, they come back to me. This is just such a great time to be alive, such a great time to be in the world, because things are changing so much, because we're realising that we can do anything. It's possible. I know it's possible because I've got the truth. I have no doubt at all. I have the proof.